Hi, I'm Donal O'Donoghue. I'm a professor of renal medicine in Manchester and a kidney doctor at Salford. And I'm joined this afternoon with by Linda Sejnieh from the US, who'll introduce herself shortly. We're going to talk about acute kidney injury and particularly about the volume replacement in early acute kidney injury, and I guess touch on who owns the patient in the emergency room and in the ITU as they are at risk of and developing acute kidney injury, and just explore whether or not practice might be different between the UK and the US. Linda?
Well, hello, Donal. It's good to see you again. For our listeners, my name is Linda Sezik. I am a nephrologist in North Carolina in the States and immediate past president of the National Kidney Foundation. Donal and I have really enjoyed doing these Skype sessions over the last year or so. And when we were trying to figure out what we were going to do this quarter, we began talking about this growing evidence that choice of IV fluid really could impact patient outcomes, and then started to look back over the last 10 years and found that while there may not be a whole lot of pro-bicarb literature that is rigorous and stands the scientific test, that we are probably moving toward an anti-chloride sort of feel in the selection of IV fluids. So we wanted to reach out to our internal medicine colleagues to alert you to this growing body of evidence. So, Donald, why don't you start out and tell me about in your ITUs, who owns the patient? How much attention is paid to prevention of acute kidney injury when the nephrologist is not around?
So I guess practice is very different across the UK, and that might be the same in the US as well. And I'm not an expert on the intensive care unit epidemiology, but almost certainly in the UK we have less critical care beds than you guys in the States. So I would think there's a case mix difference in terms of access to intensive care. And when you look at the proportion of people who are ventilated in studies from the UK versus other parts of Europe, Australia, Canada, or the US, I get the impression that in the UK, with fewer beds, the majority of patients are actually being ventilated and are not getting to level three, or the intensive care unit, we call that level three, in the UK, until they're requiring ventilation. So I suspect that we've got a case mix difference there. And we've also, as people may know, we've got a very centralized service, particularly in England, less so in the other countries of the United Kingdom. In England, for a 50 million population, we have 52 kidney centers. So the majority of hospitals do not have kidney guys and girls on site and renal beds in their hospitals. The majority of the hospitals do have critical care services. We've got about 160, 170 hospitals, but only 52 of them with full-blown kidney services, and only half of that 52 would have transplant services within them. So it's a very, very centralized model of care. And as a consequence of that, the intensivists, the acute physicians, and the intensivists play a very big role in the, or can play a very big role in prevention, risk assessment, and prevention of acute kidney injury, prevention and early management of acute kidney injury, and provision of continuous therapies. Thinking about the acute physicians early on in the pathway, and the intensivists as one heads towards more advanced acute kidney injury. How does that square up with the your setup at Duke and across the
Yeah,
states?
it's about the same. I think that the differences between hospitals and universities and healthcare settings are really striking. From intensivists utilizing the nephrology services as much as they can, versus feeling like they are able to deal with acute kidney injury on their own and consulting nephrologists only for the dialysis procedure, versus not recognizing a small bump in creatinine as potentially important.
Yeah.
And that probably contributes to differences in outcomes, but I think really points to the importance of this one article when with something as simple as IV fluid choice could really impact not just tiny bumps in creatinine, but I was really impressed by this article about how it actually prevents failure using the RIFL criteria.
Yeah, it's an impressive study, isn't it? And it's not a randomised controlled trial. It's not a perfect study, but it builds on accumulating evidence. I think that hyperchloremic acidosis is definitely bad for patients, and maybe having a default of normal saline as the crystalloid of choice actually is a negative factor for a great number of patients. I suspect, I don't think we've got the data, we don't collect it in clinical audit. I suspect that we're still using quite a lot of normal saline in the early hours of resuscitation across mm-hmm. the UK.
Do you, now, in the U.S., I would guess, no data, that normal saline is probably more of a medical, a medicine
yeah.
unit therapy, whereas the surgeons are more likely to use lactated ringers or other or chloride deplete solutions.
Yeah, yeah. I think the surgeons are ahead of the game in comparison to the physicians here, and I think that many of our colleagues in general internal medicine or the medical specialties, the non-renal people, think of normal saline as being a normal replacement as opposed to an isotonic replacement fluid, and probably until you push them, have forgotten the fact that actually this is quite a chloride load for patients. But I think you're right, in the people who come from the OR, it's Hartmann's, Ringer's lactate is the predominant replacement solution for our surgical colleagues.
So for the people that are listening to our Skype conversation, the article is Younos, Y-U-N-O-S is the first author, and it was published in JAMA in October 2012. I think that for our medicine colleagues, it probably is relevant to go back over some of the pro-bicarb literature just to underscore that this potentially is not a chance finding, that this could actually be real. So this oral sodium bicarbonate for progression of CKD, I don't know that that's really made it to prime time because the studies are small. Obviously, there's no company that really supports sodium bicarbonate, so there's going to be no $30 million trial of sodium bicarbonate. And everybody is probably fearful of the sodium load and potential for heart failure and worsening of hypertension. Is that how well utilized and well known are those data and sodium bicarbonate therapy in the UK, Donal?
Well, the study you're referring to there, which is from the Barts and the London, from good friends of mine, was a single center study, not a blinded study. I think a well conducted, first study in the area. And it gives a lot of food for thought, doesn't it? I think it has changed practice in the UK, and that there are more people thinking about keeping their chronic kidney disease patients bicarbonates in the normal range rather than only responding as a management for hyperkalemia or really quite profound acidosis and low bicarbonates in that CKD4, CKD5 before dialysis population. And it certainly provoked our research community into thinking and writing applications for studies. There is a study just commencing, an NIHR, National Institute for Health Research funded study in the UK on functional outcomes in individuals with advanced chronic kidney disease, including transplant failing patients, to look at the impact on people's functional status. But that requires, you know, probably fewer numbers than a properly organised, blinded, multi-centre study to look at progressive kidney disease and outcomes there. But it's crying out to be replicated in single centres and really for a multi-centre, properly designed, you know, NEJM level quality study for a very, very, very important population. It's interesting that the fluid replacement literature is so fascinating because there's not a lot of money to be made there by our colleagues in the pharmaceutical industry, but there's most certainly sufficient questions to be asked that, you know, a significant improvement, even if it's not a massive difference, you know, would affect millions of people globally.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as we move from this anti-chloride literature to the pro-bicarb literature, we can look at that as well as the prevention of acute kidney injury related to IV contrast after cardiac catheterization. I don't think that we're seeing quite as many of those studies coming out as we did perhaps 10 years ago, but certainly the IV bicarbonate articles, which was a single center but was done here in North Carolina at the Carolinas Medical Center, suggests that IV bicarbonate could play a role in the prevention of acute kidney injury. And maybe that's not so much the bicarb, but a lack of chloride again?
Yeah, we've looked at that recently in our Renal Association guidelines, just produced some guidelines with the interventional radiologists and you know, with the Renal Association. And looking at the evidence base, we're not persuaded that bicarbonate trumps you know, other fluid replacement in that situation. I think still an open question, a bit like the oral bicarbonate in advanced kidney disease from the Barts and the London people. I think we need to see more evidence in the literature before we can say, yes, for sure, this is the way to manage these patient groups. And maybe just a practical point as opposed to the what's the scientific answer to those two really important questions. That I think the practical point is that we still see quite a lot of morbidity and probably some mortality from contrast-induced nephropathy and people not doing the basic things right. And we certainly see that in risk assessment and early management in acute kidney injury in the non-specialist setting. There's still a lot of, well, predictable and avoidable acute kidney injury, which you know, is essentially poor practice, and I think that we need to up our game with basic care, and then, you know, do really good studies to answer these important questions.
I think you're right, though. You know, as compelling as these single center studies are, and just to go, to list them, we've got the IV study that we just were discussing in JAMA. We've got CKD progression that was in, I believe, Jason. We've got Pat Burgess's article, also from JAMA a couple years ago, about IV bicarb in to prevent contrast nephropathy. They are all single centers, and their efficacy results are so striking, you look at them and say, well, it is single center, and we don't, while efficacy may be there, they certainly aren't large enough to really give us a sense of safety, which then does deserve far, far more study, because we certainly wouldn't want to increase the risk of heart failure or respiratory failure as a result of the volume overload.
Remarkable separation between the intervention and the control arms in all of those studies, and that always makes you a little bit worried, not about the you know, the scientific integrity for those particular groups, maybe publication bias, and, you know, what about the people that have done the studies where the, maybe the numbers have been smaller and the separation, you know, less marked and not significant. It's great that we're now entering an era where all trials are being recorded and that information is available, you know, to Cochrane and to other people doing meta-analyses there. We need systems that will try and answer these questions where there are not new products with, you know, the innovation and the you know, return on investment that, you know, we see with new products. There are still a lot of basic things that we don't have the answers to. And I think we need our healthcare systems and our charitable funding agencies, you know, to support these kind of studies. Certainly the UK guys and girls that did the bicarbonate study in advanced kidney disease in CKD4 and 5, they're the first to say what we need now, you know, is a large scale study, other investigators, challenge appropriate protocols, and let's see if this is replicated elsewhere. And I guess that's the same with the other investigators. Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. And so I'm thrilled to see the UK stepping up to the plate in terms of national foundations and agencies funding studies like this. I'm going to write a letter to Congress as soon as we're done and tell them that they just need to increase the NIH budget a little bit. And I'm sure we'll have that done by next week because, you know, they're doing little else. Having said that, I guess this Skype conversation went out to our internal medicine colleagues, more so than our nephrology colleagues, just to say question baseline assumptions. Keep an eye on the IV fluid literature. While bicarbonate may not be our friend, it may be. Chloride definitely is not our friend, and I think that that's becoming more and more clear. So if Bicarb had a Facebook page, we'd press like, but if Chloride had a Facebook page, we'd definitely defriend them. Love the thumbs down.
Yeah. Maybe I can just chip in there, Linda, and say that I think we're clearly going to have a struggle to get the funding agencies and to get people to regard these kind of trials as sexy and must do. But if perchance they are half as successful as they, you know, look like they might be, then the number of bed days that we would save and the, you know, the dollars and pounds, they might not be worth as much as they used to be. But what with the healthcare savings for getting these basic things right are significant. And of course, you know, in the kidney world, the savings for the patients and their families to delay or prevent end-stage renal failure is profound, as well as enormous cost saving. So we really do need to look at these basic things and not always concentrate on the sexiest molecular biology. Clearly we need that. We need both ends of the spectrum, I guess, is my point.
That is beautiful. And what a great way to summarize our conversation and this Skype session. So for Donal O'Donoghue in the UK, my name is Linda Sezik, and I'd like to thank you again for tuning in and listening to our conversation. And don't forget to question baseline assumptions. Your choice of IV fluid therapy could have a very significant impact on patient outcomes. Take care.
Bye now.